T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, Dave Lee here. We go to the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Always appreciate his time, and a busy time for him, certainly. And that's Dr. Michael Osterholm at the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy here at the U of M. And author of a book, by the way, Deadliest Enemy, Our War Against Killer Germs, which kind of basically predicted what we're looking at right now. Mike, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Dave. Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thanks. I did want to ask you where we are today with the coronavirus here in Minnesota and what you anticipate in the next few weeks, not only here but nationwide.
Well, we're going to continue to see the number of cases go up quite a bit, I think. We've been challenged here in Minnesota, as we have in many states, with the inability to do much testing because of just the limited reagents, the chemicals that we need to do these tests. And so the numbers that you see really are just a small fraction of what's actually out there in terms of cases. We're beginning to see a number of admissions to our hospitals around the state, and that unfortunately is going to continue to increase for the foreseeable future.
There was a story I saw on, I lose track of days, Mike, as I'm sure you do too. I think it was Monday night I was reading about this story from Abbott Labs about this 5-minute COVID test. Your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, actually, we can use any new test that works today in our portfolio of testing. The problem is that, and this is, again, something that we've been trying to get people to understand for years, that we live in this global just-in-time economy where everything is made to be manufactured and delivered just in time, and much of it's been made offshore, particularly in China. And so when you think about this issue of testing, all of these test kits, or how we do a test, requires basically what we call reagents, or the chemicals that go into making these tests work. It's kind of like the gasoline inside your car. And just because somebody opens up 100 new gas stations but doesn't have any gas doesn't mean then that they're really helping with the community's need for gasoline. What we're doing is we're getting a number of companies that are getting test methods, and we call platforms, licensed and available. But the question is, how well can they actually support those tests in terms of the materials we need to run them? And what we're really, really worried about is we have a global fire going on right now with this virus, and everybody in the world wants to test, and they want to do a lot of testing. And we basically have built a garden hose type of ability to make these reagents when we long surpassed even a fire hose need. We're on almost to an entire water canal of need for these reagents. And so we're going to continue to see big shortages. And one of the things that we're doing here in Minnesota, and I'm part of a group that's looking at how to best strategically use testing, if we only have a limited amount of it, what are the ways to do that? And we believe surely to know if people who are hospitalized have it. If you have sick healthcare workers, we have to know if they're infected or not so that we don't put them back into the works area and infect more people. And we need to really work on the long-term care facilities, or what we call conjugate care homes. We have at least 30-some outbreaks in long-term care in Minnesota already, and clearly these are patients who are most vulnerable. The workers, are, if they're infected and out, that's a problem in a major way. And then oftentimes these patients get transferred to hospitals, which then just increases the pressure on the hospital for more medical care and also the risk of transmission. So testing is a huge challenge right now, and despite what we keep hearing in the daily press conferences out of Washington, D.C., that testing is not a problem, it is a serious problem, and it's not being effectively addressed yet, and it won't be because, again, these supply chains are long, weak, and thin.
Is there any way with accuracy to project the peak of cases?
Well, you know, this is one of the things I've been very frustrated with. Yesterday was another example. You know, we have so much PR going on with this outbreak. We just need to tell the public the truth. You know, I find it very, very frustrating. You know, the public wants the truth. They can handle that. You know, people who feel like we have to somehow keep the bad news from the public, I think is making a major mistake. The public is intelligent. They're caring, and they're afraid. They should be afraid, but they're not panicking. They're not out there in the streets, you know, tipping over cars and setting buildings on fire, or even for that matter, pulling knives or guns when the last roll of toilet paper goes off the shelf. And one of the things that we've done is yesterday we bandied people around from last week saying that 1 to 2 million people could die. And then yesterday it was down to 80,000. And, you know, these are all models, statistical models that take the extremes. So it could be as good as this or it could be bad as that. Let me ask you this. And I mean, you let the public answer this question right now. Did you have any sense when you heard that 80,000 number yesterday at the press conference what that meant? That meant that estimate was based on a model that said we're going to be in a Wuhan, China-like lockdown for the next 4 to 6 months in this country. If we do that, that's what we can get. Now, does anybody really believe that? I mean, those details weren't shared with the public when they made that estimate. It's not going to happen. And so what we need to do is figure out how can we keep this economy going. And I'm not equating dollars and cents to people's lives. That's not even a trade-off. It's talking about essential services. When's the last time you saw anybody be able to do remote work for garbage pickup? You know, when's the last time you saw fire and police who could basically stay at home in front of their computers and do what they do? And I could go down through the laundry list of essential services, even the media, to the extent that it's very important that the public gets this information, the grocery stores, the pharmacies. And so we've got to find a way to bring our economy, the sustaining forces in our world, and even for that matter, financial security to the people who've lost jobs in such a way that we open ourselves back up. That means we're going to take more hits. We're going to have more cases. We're going to have more people die. And we've got to have a really thoughtful discussion of how to do that. And we haven't. So, Dave, when you ask me if we're going to have a peak, I can give you any number you want right now and make it up and say, you know, based on this set of scenarios, that set of scenarios, this is what it's going to look like. We will have lots of activity for months to come. We'll see ebbs and flows, but there's not going to be, I think, just one peak and then it's over with. It's not like the tornado storms passing through the community and it's all over with by 6 o'clock tonight. This is going to be a long haul and people have to understand that. And we need to be honest. We need to be straightforward. We need to be straight shooting with the public. And if we do, I think that's what's going to get us through this, not these numbers that jerk us around from day to day.
Hey, Mike, before you go, and folks haven't read it, you have a great piece in the New York Times here the other day, two, three days ago. You did write about something called illness surveillance. So as we look down the road, tell us a little bit more about what that is.
Well, actually, illness surveillance, what we in our business call syndromic surveillance, is actually a really powerful tool. It's actually quite simple. The Minnesota Department of Health, which, again, I just cannot say enough good things about what they're doing here in Minnesota. You know, this is not a partisan issue for me. I think this governor is trying to do the very best he can with using information from all sides of the aisle and all areas. But in Minnesota, one of the things we do is in other states is we do this thing called influenza-like surveillance. And what this is, it's a weekly to sometimes twice a week survey of selected physicians' offices in the state to say, of the patients you saw today, what percent had influenza-like illness symptoms, fever, muscle aches, chills, cough? And believe it or not, during the flu season, we can actually predict with some accuracy 4 to 5 to 10 days in advance of when we're going to be seeing a big flu peak. Based on just that number of what is it, 2% or 4% or 5% of patients being seen. Well, it turned out that in this past flu season, as it started to wane in February in cities like New York and even here in the Twin Cities, we begin to see all of a sudden, boom, the peak started going back up again, the number of cases. And it wasn't at all influenza. It was actually COVID-19. And so we can use that information to trigger, even in the absence of widespread testing, to tell the public, put the pedal to the metal. Now's the time to really do this kind of sheltering in place because these cases are really taking off. And that's what was done here. And this is what we saw 2 weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago now here in Minnesota. It was seen in the end of February in New York. preceding all these severe cases. So this is what I was referring to as syndromic surveillance or illness surveillance, where we can do really some very important things with quite simple tools. And they, and the whole purpose, again, is to alert people to what's happening so we can protect them.
Mike, stay healthy. Thanks for taking the time. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, thank you a lot. Bye. Thank you.
Dr. Michael Osterholm here, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy here at the U of M. On WCCR, sure appreciate his time. Steve has more, has an update from CBS News. That's coming up in 2 minutes.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.